Welcome to this latest edition of The Real Deal Podcast, this season 11 premiere of The Real Deal Podcast on this 8th of October 2018. I'm your host, Surreal Gerald Quinn, as we discuss the world of sports and pop culture. As always, we are streaming live with from YouTube. Please, when you go to my YouTube channel, Real Deal Podcast, please hit the subscribe button. I will definitely be sending out those reminders when this podcast is over and once all the audio and video has been processed. I definitely thank all you for all your support in terms of supporting the podcast. And amazingly, this is year 11 of the podcast, and we premiered in October of 2008. Talking baseball, talking American League Championship Series. I believe it was at that point it was Tampa Bay against Boston, and looking like it's another great night for the Boston Red Sox. So from that standpoint, some things haven't changed in terms of the teams that are in the postseason. But this is year 11 for us in the podcast. The podcast has changed a lot over the course of 11 years, from doing the podcast over a cell phone to actually having computers, and actually now we have grown with the technology now, being able to stream live with YouTube and with Facebook, and sometimes occasionally even with Instagram. We have grown and evolved with the times, and again, thanks to you, the fans, for your support in terms of listening or viewing the podcast, and look forward to many more years of doing this podcast. Again, I don't know, year 11, I don't think I had a beard like this in 2008, but a lot of things have changed. But your support and your support and my fire and my passion to do this podcast has not changed. It's only increased over the course of time. And I'm looking forward to many, many more podcasts. The name change, I promise you, we won't have another name change. I think Real Deal Podcast, we're going to stick with that one. We've had a number of them over the course of the 11 years. Start out Saturday Morning Wake Up Call, Surreal Quinn Review, 12-11 Sports Talk, Surreal Gerald Quinn Podcast. But I think we're going to stick with this Real Deal Podcast for the foreseeable future. Right now, it has been the night of the blowouts. New Orleans all over Washington, 43-19. You had the Boston Red Sox up 14-1 against the New York Yankees. And I'm not completely shocked by what New Orleans is doing to Washington. That is a building that we know that the Saints can explode for 40, put 50 on anybody in that building. It's been, it was set up to be this type of game. Drew Brees' night. Drew Brees breaking records, breaking the passing yards record, and still has a chance to get his 500 touchdown pass. So it was all set up for it to be Drew Brees' night, and it absolutely has been Drew Brees' night, as he's been nearly flawless, and with some help from some just bad Washington Redskins defense, some blown coverages, sloppy play in the first half, as New Orleans is driving right now. If I'm Sean Payton, I'm taking Drew Brees out right now myself. I mean, this game is completely over. There's no way Washington is coming back in this game. So I expect that this will be the last drive for Drew Brees. And we'll talk about Drew Brees over the course of the program, as far as, what his possible legacy is as an all-time great, as a future Hall of Fame, which he certainly is right now. Even he could retire right now and be a lock for the Hall of Fame. But I thought Washington would play better. They've had a history in that building of playing some good games. Remember, that was the RG3 debut game where they took out New Orleans. Last year, they had New Orleans on the ropes before New Orleans scored like 19 straight points in the fourth quarter and the overtime to win that game. So they've had a history of playing decently, playing relatively well in that building. I thought New Orleans would win the game. But I thought it would be a close game, but again, it can go bad quickly in that building when Drew Brees and company gets it rolling. You get a couple turnovers, and again, Washington was sloppy. Alex Smith was not good in this game at all. And you look up, it's 43-19. But the flip, but the shocker of the night has to be what's going on in the American League Divisional Series with what's going on with the Yankees and Red Sox. I didn't see this coming. Didn't see this coming at all. I thought the Yankees were in somewhat control of the series. I was in, I thought the Yankees after Saturday night with Boston's pitching, the state of Boston's starting pitching with David Price getting shelled once more as he is completely has been owned by the Yankees. I thought the Yankees would come home and get some of that good home cooking and be able to at least get one of these games here at Yankee Stadium. But now, I mean, Boston is set up for the rest of the series with their pitching. They'll go if it, there is a game five sale, we'll go in game five. But I think they'll probably they're looking at probably Porcello in game four. But again, this is the worst. This is what Boston can do to you. This is they were the best offense in baseball this year. We know they have probably the two leading MVP candidates in Martinez and Betts. We know what they can score in bunches, and that's certainly what happened in this game as they just exploded on the Yankees and are up 14-1. Again, I did not see this coming. I thought the Yankees, again, with the bullpen, thought the Yankees starting pitching was was in better shape. I thought thought this would be a close game, and I thought again this series was destined to me to go five games. And I said it still can go five. I wouldn't be surprised if the Yankees won game four and returned this back to Boston for game five. But I certainly did not see this coming. This this edition of the Boston Massacre with them the Red Sox being up 14-1. And as of right now, the Major League Baseball playoffs have gone somewhat according to plan. You had Cleveland, you have Cleveland, Milwaukee. Yeah, Cleveland, Milwaukee, and Houston all taking care of business, finishing up their series. The NL Championship Series, the NLCS will start Friday with the Dodgers and Milwaukee. Milwaukee will host that series as the home team. And I thought that Atlanta did a good job just to get one game. Colorado does what Colorado does. Colorado is a team that's not that never has done anything in the postseason. I was thought they might get one game, but they ran into a hot Milwaukee team. A Milwaukee team has a great bullpen, above average, pretty good offense, and a team that's just red hot right now. They came into they've won I think like 12 straight. As of right now, again, you favor the Dodgers in that series. The Dodgers have the experience. The Dodgers have the experience. They have the better starting pitching. But again, I don't ever discount a team like Milwaukee that's hot right now. A team that has nothing to lose. Nobody expects them to do anything. I'll never discount a team of that ilk and of that magnitude. But I certainly would favor the Dodgers in that series. And as far as whoever comes out of this series, in terms of the Yankees and the Red Sox, you have to favor with Houston right now. Houston is an absolute machine. We know what they have with the starting pitching. We know their offense could just overwhelm you. And now and this is the scary part. They've fixed that bullpen to where the bullpen is actually decent right now. So right now, Houston to me is the favorite. It's a clear favorite to win the whole thing. They just absolutely toyed with a good Cleveland team. I mean, Cleveland, we know Cleveland's bullpen was not what it once was, what it has been in the past couple of years. Andrew Miller, at one point might have been the best, one of the best arms out of the bullpen in all of baseball. He had a, he had a shaky season, had a bad postseason. But I did not expect them. Cleveland still had great starting pitching, had, above average offense. There's no way I expected Houston to absolutely just toy with Cleveland the way they did. They sweep Cleveland. That game went from 2-1 to about 9-2 in about seemingly in about 30 seconds. And again, that Houston offense can just overwhelm you. They have great from top to bottom. That lineup, Springer is clutch. Altuve is great. Correa is a superstar. That offense is just loaded with. The offense was just loaded with just great hitters. And again, it takes one inning for them to just go to for them to go crazy. And that if it is Boston in Houston. That'll be an interesting series. Either way, I think the American League series will be quality series. I don't see Houston running through either Boston or New York. I think Boston, because of their offense, poses a bigger threat to Houston than does New York. And the reason why I say this is because Boston has scored 14 runs with no home runs. So Boston does not need to overwhelm you with hitting the long ball. They can single and double you to death. They don't need the home run to overwhelm you. And that was the one thing I said about the Yankees that bothered me about the Yankees coming into the playoffs. The Yankees are so dependent on the long ball. They set the record for home runs over the course of the series. But when you get to the postseason, you're facing the best pitching in the world. You're facing the best pitching. You know, you have to play a little, you have to play a little small ball. You have to steal some bases. You have to manufacture other ways to score outside, other ways to score besides hitting home runs. And that was the one thing. And you know, I thought the Yankee starting pitching was okay. We know that bullpen is lights out. But we offensively, that was the one thing that concerned me, and the reason why I couldn't pick the Yankees to win the World Series, because they were going to at some point run into some great starting pitching and great pitching all around that could find holes in those home run with those home run hitters. And you know, case in point tonight, Nathan, you know, Eovaldi, you know, decent pitcher. Not going to make anybody forget about Sandy Koufax. He goes out there and give him credit and gives up one run in 7 innings and sets up Boston's bullpen for tomorrow, where Boston can go all out. If Porcello doesn't have it, Boston has enough with their bullpen where they can use a bunch of guys in their bullpen without, in their bullpen to kind of stretch that game out if they want to. So give Eovaldi credit. The offense, of course, he gets all the run support in the world with the 14 runs, but he was also able to give them 7 innings, only giving up one run, and allow them to really save their main pieces for their bullpen for tomorrow night. So he deserves a lot of credit for that being able to go 7 innings and really sets up Boston to try to close out that series tomorrow night in New York. As New Orleans is about to take a knee and go to, will be New Orleans' record. I think New Orleans would be 3-1. Looking at what New Orleans would be. New Orleans would be 4-1. So New Orleans will be 4-1. It will be 4-1 after completion of this game. Listen, the thing about New Orleans, before we get crazy about possible Super Bowl contender, New Orleans is pass defense. I'm looking at them versus the Rams. The Rams will, if the Rams are healthy. Now I know that two of their main receivers were got knocked around yesterday, but assuming that the Rams are healthy, New Orleans is pass defense. You can throw on New Orleans. Now Washington, for whatever reason, we know what the reason is. They don't have anybody on the outside that can scare you. New Orleans, the Rams have a bunch of people on the outside that can scare you, including the running back who's also a great pass receiver. So that in terms of that matchup, I'm looking at New Orleans versus some of the other top teams in the NFC, whether it be the Rams. Minnesota had a big win. I think they will be in the mix. They have a great duo of receivers with Thielen and Diggs. They can hurt you on the outside, but so. New Orleans better get that secondary together before we can start taking them seriously as a possible Super Bowl contender. We know what they can do offensively. They are as explosive of an offense as there is outside of the Rams and also with Kansas City. But they are top three, legit top three offense. But defensively, they are not as good as they were last year defensively. They're nicked up in the secondary. Lattimore. Some of the guys, the safety is not playing as good as he was last year. The guy who missed the tackle on the Stephon Diggs, I forgot his name, Marcus. Well, I believe it's Marcus Williams, not Marcus. Marcus Williams. He's not playing to the level that he was last season. So a secondary is not what it once was. And again, you're in the NFC with the likes of the Rams, with Minnesota. If Green Bay ever gets it together, who you know. I'm not, you know, holding our, we're not holding our breath on that, but there are some teams out there in the AFC who can stretch the field. Philly, with some of their pass, with some of their receivers, even though they're struggling right now, you anticipate that eventually that they'll get together. There are some teams in the AFC that can stretch, that can go down the field. New Orleans is our secondary again is not somebody is does not scare me at all in terms of getting being able to get to a Super Bowl. But again, they have an explosive offense. They have an all-time great quarterback, and they will be certainly in the mix. They certainly will be in the playoffs. Help injuries withstanding. So again, I think New Orleans is a very good team. And I think New Orleans, but I do not put them at the level with the St. Louis with the St. Louis Rams. So that's a final 43-19. New Orleans manhandles the Washington Redskins. New Orleans improves to 4-1. Washington falls to 2-2. And right now, that division right now is up for grabs in terms of the AFC East. I still favor Philadelphia. Philadelphia has the most talent. Has the most talent top to bottom. The best quarterback. Again, the most talent top to bottom. I think they eventually will get it together. But right now, that division is struggling. Nobody's over 500. Washington, even with this loss, will still be in first place at 500 at 2-2. And they have yet to play a divisional game. So we'll see. This is their first conference loss. They lost the Indianapolis Colts, of course, in week two at home. So. The bottom line for Washington is you got to be able to, in today's NFL, you look at the top teams right now, arguably the three top teams in the league. You got the Rams, Kansas City, and New Orleans. All those three, any both all three of those teams can stretch the field. You got to be able to throw, you got to be able to move the ball through the air. Can't sit up here and play the game in a 10-yard vacuum and 3 yards in a cloud of dust. Washington, and the two losses Washington has. Their opponent has been able to take away their running game, and they've had no plan B to go to as far as in terms of Alex Smith being able to beat you from the pocket, and as far as being able to hurt you on the outside with the receivers. So, the game plan is simple. If I'm playing against Washington, I'm take away Adrian Peterson, take away their running game, and I'm daring Alex Smith and the receivers to beat me. Jordan Reed is not the player that he once was. He seemingly a couple of years ago was going to be a Pro Bowl caliber tight end. He's not that player. He's just not that player anymore. You have aging Vernon Davis who occasionally can make a play, but you don't want to count him too much. And frankly, receivers that just don't scare you. I mean, Maurice Harris, Paul Richardson's, Jameson Crowder, those guys just don't scare you. Josh Dotson either is injured or just can't, or struggles to get on the field. He was supposed to emerge after showing some flashes of brilliance last year in a couple spots. He hasn't done anything. So right now, again, you look at the NFL. The NFL is a offensive league. The NFL is built for offensive football. That's why you're seeing all this, all the scoring. That's why you're seeing all these yards and, all these teams go up and down the field. Even teams that lose, I mean, Jacksonville in a loss had 500 yards of total offense. So it is designed. It's not designed for defensive teams anymore. It's not designed for that. It's designed for explosive offensive football. And if you don't have that kind of team, then you're not going to be able to compete at a high level in terms of being a legit Super Bowl contender. Final and with the baseball, Boston wins 16-1. They manhandled the Yankees and firmly take control of the series to go up 2-1. Again, I give the Red Sox a lot of credit coming off that loss Saturday night. It seemed like the Yankees had everything going for them. I thought the Yankees, up until that point, had even outplayed the Red Sox in the first two games of the series. You look at game one, the Red Sox had the scrape and claw just to win that game 5-4, and then the Yankees come back. The Yankees come back and handled the Red Sox in game two. And I thought the Yankees were in great shape coming into this game, and at worst will come out here. Had a chance to put a lot of pressure on the Red Sox. Haven't had the best record in baseball, 108 wins. To be down 2-1, facing elimination at Yankee Stadium, but that will not be the case, as the Red Sox will try to close this series out tomorrow night. Again, the Red Sox can do this to any team with that offense. That offense over the course of this year was had the, they were the best offense in baseball. We know how much talent they have, how many great hitters they have up and down their lineup. They can do this to anybody, and tonight was just an example of what they can do to you without even hitting home runs. No home runs in this game from the Boston Red Sox, and they score. That last time I checked, they had no home runs. I can check again, see if maybe they got a late one. But the bottom line is they scored 15 or 16 runs. And I'll look here right now real quick. All right, they have one home run. Brock Holt hit a two-run home run. So 14, I figured that was a quick score. 14 of their 16 runs came without a home run. And the late home that late home run was a meaningless ninth inning home run when the game was well in hand at 14 to 1. So again, the Red Sox don't need to hit the long ball to hurt you. They can dink and dunk you. They can single and double you to death, and that was certainly the case tonight against the New York Yankees. Week five in the NFL, a lot of games. There was a few games that I was zeroed in on. We'll begin with Kansas City against A. Kansas City stays undefeated, 30-14 over Jacksonville. This game was closer than what the score indicated. Jacksonville played it was a sloppy performance for Jacksonville. They had five turnovers. In this game, Jacksonville had a number of opportunities to get this game close, to put some game pressure on Kansas City, but they had had a intercept, had red zone interceptions. They were bad in the red zone, and considering Jacksonville had been one of the best red zone teams over the last year or so, even come or you go back to 2017 and even the first four games this season, Jacksonville had been a great red zone team. That was not the case yesterday. Kansas City, you can't make any mistakes against that offense. Kansas City has an explosive offense. The quarterback, we know what the quarterback is at this point. We know what he did against Denver. He was great in that game. He got his first road test, got knocked around, but bounced back and finished that game well. Kansas City goes to 5-0. And again, I'm going to watch Kansas City closely, especially after in the second half of the season when teams start to take away some of the gimmicks that they do, some of the trickery that they do. And again, this is different from last year. Last year, they had Alex Smith. Pat Mahomes is a much better player than Alex Smith. There's all this to it. He scares you a lot more than Alex Smith, a younger. He's more athletic. He can throw the ball down. He can make throws that Alex Smith, frankly, just cannot make. So from that standpoint, they are a little bit better. I still think I still think the defense does not scare you. The secondary, to me, does not scare you. Again, Bortles had almost about 430 yards passing. Mind you, Jacksonville is still missing Fournette. So again, if I'm Jacksonville, I walk out that game saying to myself, okay, October game at Kansas City, we've shown that we almost went to New England in the playoffs and should have beaten them. So I would have no fear if I'm Jacksonville going down to Kansas City late in January for a possible divisional or even AFC championship game. Big win out of Minnesota over the Eagles, 23-21. That was the first time all season to me that the Vikings looked like the Vikings with the defense. Their defense scored a touchdown. They knocked the Wentz around. People were talking about what was wrong with the Philly offense. I don't think it was so much the Philly offense as much as how well Minnesota played defense yesterday. Defense with the pass rush, that was the first time that the pass rush got there consistently. Kirk Cousins, again, was tremendous. And Kirk Cousins has been great throughout the course of the season for the most part. Again, I know he had the one bad game against Buffalo, where I still can't explain how they you just you'll never be able to explain to me how Buffalo came into Minnesota and embarrassed the Vikings 27-6. That's just one of those, one of those crazy September games where you just can't explain. Tampa Bay, goes to New Orleans and beats New Orleans. So certain, those some of these early games, early season games, you cannot explain in the NFL, and that was one of them. This was more like the Minnesota team that we were accustomed to seeing last year. Great defense, were able to run the ball enough, and got some great quarterback play out of Kirk Cousins, who so far has been great throughout the course of the season. Getting had the one blip in Buffalo. Other than that, Cousins has played on a high level. Even in a loss against the Rams, Cousins played great. Minnesota's defense just couldn't stop Los Angeles that night. But nice win a nice feel good win for New Orleans. Excuse me, for Minnesota on the road in Philadelphia, which is never an easy place to play. I'm not concerned about the Eagles, especially in that division. Wentz is still kind of in training camp, so you got to give him another week or so. He'll be fine. Again, the Eagles, listen, we knew the Eagles were going to take a dip from last year. They were 13-3 last year. They had a dominant season. The schedule is brutal this year. Super Bowl hangover. So we knew we were going to take a slight dip. But again, that division is bad right now. Division's bad. The Eagles still had the most talent. So I'm not overly concerned about how the Eagles are playing football right now. Bottom line is that offensive line is just not the way what it was last year. They're not running the ball as effective as they were last year. Wentz is getting hit more this year in the pocket than he was, even before the injury last year. So that offensive line is not what it was. The defensive line is not getting to the quarterback like it did last year. I thought Brandon Graham had, I think, he had his first sack of 2018 in this game, in this particular game. So again, not overly concerned about the Eagles' big win for Minnesota. Steelers take out, Steelers handle the Falcons 41-17. The Falcons are going in absolute the wrong direction. That defense right now is like a they're like a high school defense at this point in the season. The Fal listen, the Falcons, when you think about it, have not recovered from 28-3. Last year, even when making the playoffs, they underachieved. The offense was all screwed up. Couldn't get the ball to Julio Jones in the red zone. They have not. Again, when you really think about big picture, when it comes to the Falcons, they still have not recovered from losing the Super Bowl. It was now 2 years ago. Again, they'll be a team that, will not be a threat. Won't be a threat to make the playoffs at 1-4. But they'll be the type of team that you do not want to see in December if you're trying to make the playoffs. They're gonna be that type of team because they still have a lot of talent, a lot of offensive talent. They are banged up. They're banged up on the defensive end. On the defensive end, there's no question some of their best players, especially in that secondary. So you can move the ball at will on the Falcons. And the Steelers finally offensively looked like the Steelers. Big day out of Antonio Brown. The Steelers, were able to run the ball for the first time in a couple of weeks with Connor. Who knows when Le'Veon Bell is coming back? There was some rumors, there was some rumblings this past week about possibly week seven. I believe it when I see it. I think he'll be back before, week 10, or will be back before week 10, but I'm not sure, so sure that he's going to come back in week seven. So we'll see what happens with that. Steelers have a big game coming up this week against a Cincinnati team that is all of a sudden 4-1. And that division has actually gotten stronger. Like that, there's no weak links in that division, the AFC North. When you look at Baltimore at 3-2, when you look at how Cleveland's playing, and when you look at what Cincinnati at 4-1, that division is all of a sudden that division has gotten strong. And I can make a case that right now, that top to bottom, that could be the strongest division in football, top to bottom, like top to bottom. So all of a sudden, Pittsburgh is going to be in a dogfight to get to the playoffs. And to definitely to win that division, but they get a nice win, a nice feel good win over the Falcons. Good win for the Rams against Seattle. I thought Seattle played well. Again, these two teams, It was a, you will certainly take, if you're the Rams or any team in the league, you certainly take those divisional wins on the road. Those divisional wins on the road are like extra wins. And again, this is a game that Seattle played well. The Rams' defense is still not quite where the talent dictates it should be. Their secondary hasn't played. You can move the ball. I mean, they had some blown coverages. They had a lot of blown coverages in the secondary that I saw. I was paying, really watching this game along with the Philly Viking game in that late 4:25 window. So you could still move the ball on the Rams, especially that secondary. I expected the secondary to pick. I expected to pick up as they have more get more games under their belt. Their defensive line, I expect that to play. Expect them to play better over the course of the season. But again, the bottom line is right now the offense is just unstoppable. I mean, the offense is unstoppable. I mean, you take away. You try to take away Gurley, Goff will light you up on the outside with the receivers that they have. Despite the fact that they lost their two best receivers in the game, they still were able to move the ball up and down the field against Seattle, who, and we know Seattle defensively is not what they once were. But again, I thought Seattle played well in this game. But again, the Rams are a machine offensively. That again, that's going to put can score 30 in their sleep. Detroit hangs on against Green Bay 31-23. Of course, this is going to be the game where, if you are Mason Crosby, you got to be grateful that you have established yourself as I think he's been in the league like 12 years, a guy who, who has made some big kicks, who has won some playoff games with his kicks, and really has been one of the most consistent kickers in football. But it was one of those, but this was a game to forget for Crosby. He missed four kicks, including an extra point. Kind of somewhat overshadowed again another pedestrian another game where the Green Bay offense, another game where people are talking about the Green Bay offense, how much they struggle. But again, for Brett, I'll say Brett Favre, Aaron Rodgers threw for 442 yards. Green Bay probably should have scored well over 30 points. I actually feel like they moved the ball up and down the field against Detroit. They moved the ball up and down the field against Detroit. Green Bay had a couple of turnovers, had a couple of turnovers in the game. Again, Detroit jumped out 24-0. Green Bay, you miss those field goals. Those are killers. It would have been 24-9. But again, there's a lot of talk that's been going around. It started out, it's been going on for a couple of weeks, and it really amped up this weekend about the McCarthy Aaron Rodgers relationship and that dynamic, and how Green Bay is wasting the prime of a guy who is a who will go down as one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time, Aaron Rodgers, and to me, the most skilled quarterback, the most completely skilled quarterback in the history of the sport in terms of the most having the most complete set of skills. Again, I know Green Bay's talent is not where it had where it was when they in those Super Bowl in the year they won the Super Bowl, and even a couple even those years where they were 15-1 the following year in 2011. But you are wasting Aaron Rodgers right now if I'm the Green Bay brass, if I'm the Green Bay brass. You got to start rethinking not only with McCarthy, but just rethinking your entire philosophy as far as going out. You see what the Rams did, okay? Rams said, you know what, we're gonna even with you have a even with we know we have Goff on the contract on this rookie contract for a couple more years. We're gonna go out and try to win it right now. And they're trying to win it this year. You have other teams that are trying to win it. You have Minnesota trying to win it this year. You can't sit up here. The NFL is nothing's promised in the NFL. The NFL has become a year-to-year league, and again, Green Bay is going to have to change their philosophy in terms of how they do things. In regards to, you have this guy who is a once-in-a-generation talent. You got to go out there and get him some players. Like again, the Khalil Mack trade should have been made. I know Jordy Nelson isn't setting the world on fire in Oakland. But again, Jordy Nelson was one of Rodgers' favorite targets. They got to go out there and get some players that can scare you on the outside. They have one guy right now, that scares teams on the outside, and that's Davante Adams. All those rest of those other guys who don't scare anybody, including Randall Cobb at this point in his career, don't scare anybody on the outside. Jimmy Graham, it's not the Jimmy Graham of 2012, or even 2013 for that matter. It's not the same player. So and he's been passed by a number of tight ends in the league since he, since he was in New Orleans and had those great years in New Orleans way back when. So he's not even a top five tight end. He's no longer a top five. A top five. He might not even be a top 10 tight end at this stage in his career. He's just not. He's okay. He's not great anymore. So again, they are wasting Aaron Rodgers, and that you, if you're Aaron Rodgers, Aaron Rodgers knows that he's being wasted right now. So we'll see what happens. Again, no one as good as Chicago has played at 3-1. No, they had a bye. No one is running away with that division. You don't trust Detroit. Again, Minnesota still 2-2-1. Green Bay 2-2-1. Let me see Minnesota, string together a couple of games before I'm ready to say they're back where they were last year. So that's another division that could be somewhat up for grabs. And as of right now, I don't know who to favor because I don't know how good Chicago is. Frankly, I just frankly don't know how good of a team Chicago is right now. Houston takes out Dallas in overtime, 19-16. Good win for Houston. Finally, again, Deshaun Watson is starting to look like Deshaun Watson. Again, you saw if you watched this game closely, you saw the difference between the two quarterbacks as far as a guy in Deshaun Watson who can beat you, not only can beat you from the pocket, but can beat you from a leg with his legs versus the guy in Dak Prescott who has gotten to a point to where he can't even beat you outside the pocket. You know, it was covered last year, or 2 years ago, Prescott was great outside the pocket. He is no longer that player anymore. So as of right now, he'll scramble as that offensive line is not what it once was. Dak Prescott has really become an average quarterback, and the offense struggles to score 20 plus points, 20 over 20 points. I have no problem. And again, I'm not a Jason Garrett fan whatsoever, but I have no problem with putting the ball at the 42-yard line. First of all, anybody watched the game closely, the Houston defensive line, in particular Jadeveon Clowney and J.J. Watt, lived in the Dallas backfield, especially in the fourth quarter. They lived in the Dallas backfield. They were knocking Prescott around throughout the course of the game, basically taking turns. They controlled Ezekiel Elliott. Listen, you pin them deep, hope to get a three and out, and hope to get great field position to where at that point a field goal would win the game. You don't anticipate that Houston in a defensive game is going to be able to go down the field and even to be able to go down the field as easily as they went down the field. So I have no problem with Dallas, with Garrett's decision. Again, I'm not a Jason Garrett fan, to say the least. I'm not a Jason Garrett fan, but that is a classic second guess. Well, he should have went for it. Now, if he goes for it and doesn't get it, well, we should have punted. So, that's why I'm not too big on second guesses. I don't say it at the time it happened. I didn't have a big problem with it, and I'm not going to say I had a big problem with it after watching the result. Nice win for Houston. Houston's a very interesting team because I think Deshaun Watson is getting back to where he was before the injury. They have some players, if they can get any semblance of a running game going and take some of the pressure off Watson, they have a legit top flight receiver in Dustin Hopkins. We know defensively what they can be with those three monsters in Watt, Clowney, and Merciless. Secondary is decent. Again, Houston's one of those, they're a very interesting team to watch out for in the AFC if they can keep Watson healthy and develop some type of running game. Nice win for Cleveland over Baltimore, 12-9. And what's new for Cleveland? They go to have another overtime game. Again, Cleveland's, what you watch New Orleans do, you should have more respect for Cleveland in terms of what New Orleans did tonight. 43 points. New Orleans has put 43 on Washington. They put 40 on New Orleans, put 33 on the Giants. Cleveland, in the overtime game, Cleveland held New Orleans at New Orleans to 21 points. That Cleveland defense is real. Again, that is a playoff, and I said this a couple of weeks ago on the podcast. That Cleveland is a playoff roster. Now, again, I know Mayfield. They're 2-0 with Mayfield. He's played a 2-1. I think he lost one game, but they've played better with Mayfield. I'm not completely sold on Mayfield. We'll see how the season plays out, but he has provided a spark. He has provided some energy for that team. That the defense, he has. You can say that he has injected that. I'm not quite sure as of yet how good he is. He's not Patrick Mahomes. He's not Patrick Mahomes. He's not Jared Goff. So let's hold out on that talk before we get too crazy. But he has injected that team with a sense of passion, with a sense of energy. And again, that defense is real. That is a legit top defense all around, led by, of course, Myles Garrett. And again, Cleveland's going to be around. Cleveland is definitely an improved football team without question. Carolina edges out the Giants 33-31, a bitter loss for the Giants, as you thought before Graham Gano makes that 63-yard field goal that the Giants were going to come up with their best win of the season, a win that would have got them right back in the mix in the AFC East. There's a big difference in the NFL between 2-3 and 1-4. Now the Philadelphia game on Thursday night becomes a must-win game for the Giants, as far as I'm concerned. I hate using that term, but the Giants want to be relevant this year. They're going to have to win that game. It will not be easy facing an angry Eagle team coming off a loss against Minnesota, coming off a home loss against Minnesota. So again, this game. There was a lot to this game. Of course, it was overshadowed by one Odell Beckham Jr., the ESPN interview. And I'll say this about it. When you have a guy on your team, and again, it's gotten to a point where you can call them, you can change their name from the New York Giants to the Odell Beckhams. Because that team is centered, that team begins and ends with Odell Beckham, and that's a problem. You have a guy who is the epitome of a me guy, a guy who repeatedly will throw teammates, coaches, the organization under the bus. I mean, think about this for a second. They just gave this dude $95 million, made him the highest paid wide receiver in NFL history, and he's still not happy. He's still not sure he wants to play in New York. He's complaining about the cold. I mean, he threw everybody. Everybody got thrown under the bus. But this is who he is. He is the epitome of a cancer. You don't win championships. You don't win consistently with guys like Odell Beckham on your team. You just don't. Now, if you want to say, but what about T.O. the year he went to Philly and they went to the Super Bowl? Remember, Philadelphia was coming off three straight years, right, where they were in the NFC Championship. They had an established culture. They had a franchise-caliber quarterback. They had a top head coach in Andy Reid at the time. So they could, they could gamble on a Terrell Owens, and it only worked out for a year. It worked out for 1 year. They went to the Super Bowl, and it fell apart after that. So that didn't last long. The thing about Odell Beckham is, the veteran players will just ignore him, a la Eli Manning. Those guys, the Eli Mannings, Olivier Vernon, some of those guys who have been around the league 5 years or more, they'll ignore him. It's the younger players that concerns you. It's the Sterling Shepherds, the Saquon Barkleys. You see Sterling Shepherd on the sideline. Hitting the Gatorade bucket. Who does that remind you of? Okay. So the new guys who come into that locker room, drafted, free agent or otherwise, they are taking his cue. And taking the cue of a guy who lacks accountability, who lacks leadership skills, who lacks any sort of self-awareness. That's how you lose football games. And that's one of the reasons why the Giants are 1-4. Now the Giants, let's be honest, minus the Odell Beckham nonsense, the Giants are just not a very good football team. They don't get to the court. They don't rush the passer anymore. The offensive line is mediocre. They have an aging quarterback who's not awful, but he's still an aging quarterback. His best days are still behind him. I'm not sure. I'm not sold on Shermer as a head coach. So the Giants, again, the Giants are a team or franchise that is clearly in transition. But again, you have one guy, a non-quarterback at that, who dictates your locker room. And everything runs through him. It's all about him. And he's at the point where it's not, he wants to be LeBron-like. He wants to be one of these transcendent athletes. And how you do that, because it's not enough putting up big numbers in the NFL, because you still have a face mask, you still have a helmet on. How you do that is you say things and do things to generate attention to yourself, whether it be negative or positive. So he's at that point in his career. So it's not even about whether or not the team wins or loses. It's about did Odell put up numbers? How's Odell feel now? What is Odell thinking? It's all about him. So there's no such thing as bad publicity when it comes to Odell Beckham. As long as you're talking, as long as we're talking about him, as long as he's trending on Twitter, that's what he wants. And when you have your number, when you have your star player who's driving that locker room, you're not winning football games that way. You're just not. So looking at the NFL right now, just a lot of average to mediocre teams in the NFL right now. Because I asked myself the question after all these games are played, even before Monday night, who's good in the NFL right now? We know what the Rams of Kansas City are. We know the Saints can score. Not necessarily sold on Carolina. Green Bay, Minnesota, who knows what direction they're heading in. The NFC East is a mess. The AFC North is strong, but are any of those teams legit contenders to come out of the conference right now? New England will be fine. They'll be right there at the end as far as competing, as far as a team that can get to the Super Bowl, but they're not what they once were. So San Diego, can you completely trust them? Denver has come back down to earth. We know Miami, even at three, Miami's not very good. At 3-2, Buffalo can something even at two, Buffalo just can look like the worst team in the league. They look like an 0-5 team versus a 2-3 team. So not that many quality teams in the NFL right now. When you really look at the landscape of the NFL right now, you got about three or four good teams. I mean, how many teams you say could get to and win the Super Bowl right now? To get to and win the Super Bowl right now. Again, week five, still, a lot of football to be played. But, you had, again, Rams, Kansas City, New Orleans, maybe New England. As far as the college football goes, again, Notre Dame basically is in control of their own destiny. They still have some tough games left. Florida State is not Florida State blew the lead against Miami. Florida State is not a total disaster that they looked after the first 2 weeks. Florida State, that could be a tricky game for Notre Dame in late November. USC, always a rivalry game. Pittsburgh coming up this week. Pittsburgh is much improved from say early in the season when they got bombed by Penn State. So again, Notre Dame that will not. I don't think Notre Dame is going to have clear sailing. But I'll say this about Notre Dame: this is the best Notre Dame has looked in years, years. Even the year they went, they lost and got blasted by Alabama in the national championship. I think it was the 2012 season. But this is the best they've looked from top to bottom in years. They're physical. They can run the ball at the quarterback. The switch to the quarterback was, was much was needed, and it's turned out to be the right move. Their defensively, they get to the quarterback. This is the best they've looked in many of years, a long time. So they're going to be a factor in the playoffs. The big winner this weekend was Texas. That was a great win. That was a program changing win for Texas. They got Oklahoma's defensive coordinator fired. As Oklahoma's defense had been struggling throughout the course of the year, remember, Oklahoma gave up a ton of points to Army. So this was something that had been going on throughout the course of the season, where they had just been counting on just outscoring people. That did not work against Texas in this game. Give Texas a lot of credit. Not only they basically had to win the game twice, but they hung on. And again, Tom, once Herman, listen, Texas has as many resources as any school in the country in terms of money, facilities. They have their own network. They're in the Big 12. Once Herman has turned the corner with that friend, with that university, you're gonna see 10, 11, 12 win seasons moving forward for that school. That school has too many resources. He'll be able to recruit right with Alabama, right with Ohio State. He'll be able to recruit with anyone. Have bringing that school back to relevance. Again, that is a loaded school as far as resources. So that was a statement game, a good win, a great win, not a good win, a great win for Texas. I don't see how in the world they lost to Maryland. And again, I know Maryland, for whatever reason, has owned them in the past couple of years, but Texas is headed towards having a big year. We talked about with Miami and Florida State. Miami, Florida State showing a pulse. The Miami quarterback cannot play whatsoever. Nice win for Florida over LSU. Again, LSU, it's the same deal with LSU. Great defense, solid running game, no quarterback. Again, I don't understand how LSU can get this top-tier NFL talent at all these different various positions, cornerback, wide receiver, running back, but cannot for their life depended on it, not even a NFL caliber quarterback, but even a guy, a SEC caliber quarterback. So you had a number of, but that's the story of LSU. A number of they have a showdown next weekend is Georgia. A number of ranked teams lost this season, not this season, this week. Excuse me, this week. But again, the major players, Ohio State, Alabama, Clemson took care of business. Again, now we're at the point where you have to take Notre Dame seriously. Notre Dame's at a point to where they might even can afford one loss, to be honest with you. So Notre Dame is in a great position right now to make a major run for a playoff spot. And again, college, you can say what you want. You can love or hate Notre Dame all you want. But the bottom line is college football is better when Notre Dame is good. So, and again, this is a legit Notre Dame team. This is a Notre Dame team that I think that can compete with a Clemson, with the Ohio State, with the Alabama. I didn't feel like we've seen Notre Dame teams in the past 4 or 5 years have 10, be 10, 9, 10 win caliber teams, but we knew once they went up against one of these big boys that they had no chance whatsoever. They are strong on at both at they are strong at the point of attack as far as offensive line, defensive line. They have enough, and they've always had skill position players in terms of guys at the wide receiver and running back position under Kelly. They just didn't have that physical presence. They have that this year, so we'll see if Notre Dame can survive some of these pitfalls as far as Florida State, USC, Pittsburgh this week. But they look to be a team that can compete for a playoff spot and possibly a national championship. As far as I have a lot of there's a number of shows I need to get caught up on. I did get caught up on Empire. I do now. Again, before you trash me and say and ask me why are you still watching Empire? Empire is my guilty pleasure television. Is I know the show is not very good, but I it's a show that I just can't stop watching. I do like when I got caught up with it this weekend. I do like the idea of them basically showing you what the what Lucius and Cookie were like before they had money. So, strip down the characters, they're broke. They're trying to rebuild. They're trying to rebuild Empire from scratch or rebuild their music company from scratch. They lost Empire, lost everything. They're sweating in the mansion. So that was the only way they can go. They could go and have you in terms of the storyline, in terms of with the season being with the season being what the fifth season. So I'm fine with that. We'll see what happens. Obviously they're gonna bring back Felicia Rashad is gonna play a role this year. She was in jail. They showed her in jail or something, in jail. So she's still out there as a villain. The girl, what's her name? No, I can't remember her name. She's a good villain, green eyed with green eyes. I can't remember from the top, from the tip of my tongue. Can't remember. She's a good villain. Like, I mean, listen, you can't take Empire that serious. It is a nighttime soap opera that is driven by two characters, driven by Terrence Howard and Taraji P. Henson. So that's fine. It's fine for what it is. It's a show that, again, I'm not gonna sit up here and recommend you and say you need to watch it. It is my guilty pleasure show that I continue to watch and probably will watch until it goes off. But it doesn't seem like it's going to be going off anytime soon. But we'll see what this season take what this season brings. As far as the weekend and music, again, another big weekend of hip hop. Having T.I., Ghostface, and Dave East come out the same weekend, and again, I call it, with those three coming out. I would title it, my theme for those three albums would be grown man music. You had three artists absolutely stay in their lanes, not try to be, update, in terms of not trying to get too out of whack or out, not, they stayed in their lanes. They stayed in their lanes. And I have to, being an old head, 39 years old, you have to appreciate. I appreciate that. I appreciate you. I mean, you can evolve, but you can evolve as an artist, but you can't be. You can't. Don't do babyface and try to be wear shiny suits. Like babyface was trying to do videos with Jay-Z. Can't evolve to that much. You can't evolve that far. Or when I mean when the Isley Brothers were trying to wear velour, nah. Nah, stay in your lane. You can stay in your lane and do what you do. And I felt that from Ghostface, especially Ghostface and T.I. Dave East is obviously younger than those two. But in terms of Ghostface and T.I., I think it's T.I.'s best album in maybe in a decade. Ghostface getting back to being Ghostface. So again, this is gonna go down as one of as a historic year in hip hop. I really believe that because it's nothing but quality and nothing but quality albums have been coming out since January, since the start of the year. So continues to do so. It'll probably be, Qu Quavo's coming out soon. Kanye will be out in November, around Thanksgiving. So it's Nas might come out again before the year's over. But even if nobody else came out for the rest of the year, it would still be a great year of music in terms of hip hop and where the rap game stands right now. That's going to wrap it up for this latest edition of the Real Deal Podcast. Remember, subscribe when you go to Real Deal Podcast at my YouTube channel. Hit that subscribe button. I appreciate you. I appreciate all your support. Thanks for listening. Remember, this is the Real Deal Podcast with no apologies. Thanks for listening. I'm out.